Once again, welcome to another segment of Reclaiming History, airing on WOO and 105.3 FM. And this is Livonia Mallory. And I have a very important guest on the line with me today. He is the author of Think Black, Mr. Clyde W. Ford. In 1947, Thomas J. Watson set out to find the best and brightest minds for IBM. At the City College, he met a young accountant student named John Stanley Ford and hired him to become the company's first black software engineer. While Watson may have been ready for change, many of IBM's white employees were not. They did everything in their power to humiliate, subvert, and undermine Ford, hoping to see him fail and get fired. His son, Clyde W. Ford, has written a thought-provoking and heartbreaking new book entitled Think Black, A Memoir. Mr. Clyde W. Ford reveals how he came to appreciate his father and the sacrifices his father made as a hidden figure in the history of computers to advance blacks in high technology. This is a masterful story that Ford explores the interactions of race, technology, history, providing a riveting personal narrative alongside a compelling call to action. Clyde, thank you for joining us on Reclaiming History.
Livonia, thank you for inviting me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Listen, I want my listeners to know that I read this book cover to cover. And I tell you, it reads, you know, like almost like a spy novel at different points. I and a history book at the same time. I'm in the 60s, and then I'm in the 50s, and then I'm around World War II, and then I'm in the apartheid period. I mean, this book just spans a historical period that's very broad. And at the same time, it's a very personal story about your father and you and your relationship with him. Tell me, how did you come up with the title for the book?
Well, that's really funny. I came up with the title. I was sitting in a restaurant with my wonderful editor at HarperCollins, Tracy Sherrod, and we'd had a working title up to that point, which I also really liked. It was called Color Coded. And Tracy looked at me and she said over lunch, you know, I don't think that title has the pizzazz that we need. And I said to her, you know, Tracy, I'm pretty good at coming up with titles, but I can't do that on demand. So, you know, just give me a couple of days. We had lunch and we were walking out. And the minute I stepped out of the door, I turned to Tracy and I said, Think Black. And she turned to me and she said, that's it. So it was one of those wow, kind of inspirational moments where a number of factors come together and you can't quite explain how or why, but you know when you hit it, it's the right one.
And the picture on the cover, I mean, when I saw this picture, it took me right back to the 60s, to the 70s. You've got these great sideburns, these wonderful dark shades. You are super cool in the image. What year was this picture taken, actually?
That's really great. And that's one of the first questions I ask people in my talks, if they can determine when that picture was taken. There's a couple of clues there, as you have pointed out, the bell bottoms, the pork chop sideburns, the dark shades, the newsboy hat tipped to one side where you can see my afro underneath it. And also I'm holding a picture of a newsletter, Mojo, with Malcolm X right there on the front of the newspaper. And so it's a 1968 picture. That newspaper, Mojo, actually comes from the Black Student Committee at Columbia University, 68. The spring of 68 was when Columbia, as you probably remember, had the first ever student-led protest that took over buildings where Black students were really protesting against the university's incursion into Harlem. White students were protesting against the university's involvement with the war effort. And then Latin students, Latino students, Latinx students had organized into Young Lords and were very much in support of what the Black students were doing regarding the university's incursion into Harlem as well, too. So it was that picture really, for me, captured an era that was very important for me personally, but also, as it turns out, was important in my relationship with my father.
So tell my listeners a little bit about your relationship with your father and what these particular clothing you were wearing, and what sort of statement were you making, and how is that statement different from your father's statement?
Yes, and so I think probably the way I start the book is the best way to talk about that. And I really start the book with describing how I was dressed and what I was thinking about on my first day to go to work at IBM. Of course, I worked there for 7 years. My dad worked there for 37 years. My first day, I was dressed not too dissimilar from how I look on the cover of the book, with the exception that I did have a suit, but it was a zoot suit. I did not have a white shirt. I had a bright red turtleneck. I had, and this I didn't get into the book, I actually had on patent leather shoes, high-heeled shoes, which were in vogue in those days. Had a huge afro, similar to what you see on the cover. And there I was, kind of strutting down Wall Street towards the IBM office that I was working at. And I was literally, I was humming the theme song to Shaft, which I had seen the night before. And I kind of pictured myself as Richard Roundtree in the movie. And there I was going to work to battle the forces of hostility, the white forces of hostility arrayed against me. So that was me, my first day at IBM. And boy, I sure shocked a bunch of people in my IBM office. Contrast that to my dad, 1947. More than 25 years earlier. You know, here he goes into his first day at IBM. He's got on a white shirt and suit and a tie. He's got a very conservative hat, carrying a leather briefcase. And he is the picture of a traditional straight-laced IBM employee. And I think that contrast is maintained throughout the book in some respects, where I was very much the radical, very much involved in the Black Power movement, involved with the Panthers, very much thought how important and believed and worked for social justice. My dad, on the other side, was much more conservative, and I did not realize the ways in which that conservatism also masked his own sense of what he could do that might make a difference, even working in a company like IBM.
So in the book, you talk a lot about the IBM men and the IBM image and the ties and the white shirts and how there was this, you know, uniform that you had to wear when you came on board as an IBM employee. And your father fell right into that IBM image. But at the same time, being Black, he stood out from the rest of his colleagues. Can you tell my listeners a little bit more about the culture within IBM when your father was there?
Absolutely. And I think there is another picture. In fact, the only other picture in the book really demonstrates that. That picture, which is a couple of pages in, shows my father standing with his IBM colleagues. And there he is, the only Black person among a group of some 20-odd people. There are two other women in the photograph. And it's really reflective of the time. I mean, essentially, the IBM culture that my dad went to work in was a culture that valued a particular view of who it was that went to work. They were men, they were white, they weren't women. And when my dad came along, he was really subjected to the kinds of things in terms of race and racism that it's almost hard to believe today, because the things that African Americans, I think, in the workforce face are somewhat more subtle and sometimes, not always, a little subdued from what my dad faced. I mean, the one example I remember, the story he told so many times, is how one of his first IBM meetings, he thought he was going to a meeting with a business contact set up for him by his colleagues. And when in fact, what his colleagues had set up was a liaison with a prostitute, which they were hoping to catch on camera and thereby force him into a compromising situation, position from which he would have to resign from IBM. What they didn't know is my dad, although he was pretty straight-laced on the outside, he was also really streetwise as well, too. He grew up in the Bronx. He understood the streets, and he used his street smarts to get out of that situation.
Oh, my goodness, Clyde, we are out of time. That's the end of our interview for today. Tune in next time for a continuing discussion with Clyde W. Ford, the author of Think Black and Memoir. We'll talk more about IBM's involvement with the Nazi movement. with apartheid and their use of technology. Thanks, Clyde, for joining me. I can't wait to have you on again.
Thank you, Livonia.